Isra of Kaos, the prohibition of litigating in a civil court. We have two bookend type of commandments in the Torah, one at the end in Sefer Dvarim, which is the commandment to establish Jewish courts. Shoftim Shoftim Titen Lecha B'chol She'arecha, that's the positive commandment. And then there's the mitzvah at the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim, which is the negative commandment of Ve'elam Mishpatim Asher Tasim Lifnehem. These are the ordinances that you're supposed to set in front of them, meaning the Jewish law judges, that when you have the cases to be adjudicated, they have to be adjudicated Lifnehem, in front of the Dayanim, below Lifnei Arkos, and not in front of the secular courts. This is a limud, which is derived in the Gemara in Gittin Daf Peches Amabes, and it teaches us this fundamental founding principle that there is a prohibition for two Jews when they have a dispute with each other to go to the secular court system. So it's fortunate we have a Besdin system. It doesn't mean that the affirmative obligation to go to a Besdin requires that people deliberately get themselves into a fight so that they can bring somebody else to Besdin. If you never end up going to Besdin, that's perfectly fine. You're entitled and welcome and encouraged not to get into any disputes, or if you do get into a dispute, to settle it amicably with the other party. Lifnim Mishur Sadin, you work things out without the need to litigate in Besdin. But if you do litigate, you're not allowed to litigate in the secular court, and so we have Batei Din. Now, is this a mitzvah on a Daraisa level? Api Pashtus, as the Tashbeis points out in Chelik Beis, the Minresh Tzadi of his Chuvos, Pashtus is, of course, we're deriving it from a pasuk in the Torah, that it's a alav abal mechlal esei, that lifneihem velo lifnei akum, or as the Gemara in Gittin says, Ve'elam mishpatim asher tasim lifneihem, lifneihem lo lifnei ovdei kachavim, davracher lifneihem lo lifnei yotus. That there are two different principles that we derive from this pasuk. One is that the prohibition of going in front of the secular courts to litigate, and the other is the prohibition of going in front of non-certified dayanim who are only had yotos. There is an opinion, that of the Sefer Mikvot Baruch from Rav Baruch Klai, who says it's an asmachta bi'alma. Even if I learn that the pasuk is an asmachta bi'alma, it certainly is a reflection of Ratzon Hashem, that it's very clear that it would be improper to utilize the secular court system when we have a Torah, a system of justice. But Rova Poskim assumed that this is a mitzvah deraisa and a very, very serious one. So when we turn to the part of the mitzvah, which is Lifnehem, V'lo Lifnei Ovdei Kochavim, not to go in front of the Arkos, not in front of Komakom, says the Gemara, Sha'ata Motzeh Guriyos, Shalov de Kochavim, Apopi, Shedineim, Kedine Yisrov, Yer Torashai, Lizok, Eklahem, Shedem, Aveilu, Mishpatim, Asher Tasim, Lifnehem, that whenever you find the secular courts, even if they judge the case exactly the same as we would have judged the case, if it would come in front of the Beis Din, you're still not allowed to go. And we can understand that based on the explanation that Rashi gives as to the prohibition. Rashi, the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim, maybe Dina Yisrael Lifnei Goyim, if you bring the case that involves Jews in front of non-Jews, Mechalel Es Hashem, it's a desecration of God's name, Miyakir Shem Avodah Zorah L'Achshiva, and you're promoting a foreign system, you're promoting the idolatrous system of law. Tashbeis points out, it doesn't have to be idolatrous, even if it's some secular legal system of law that is not subservient to an idolatry. Let's say it's the American system of law, where you have separation between religion and state, so their legal system is not one that's based, presumably, upon any idolatry. Nonetheless, you would have the same problem, that it's a chilul Hashem, that you are promoting a separate system as if you're indicating that the Jewish system of justice is insufficient, and in order to receive justice, you need to turn to the justice system that's not the divine justice system that was established by the nations of the world, and you're abandoning the divine justice system given to us by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's Rashi's explanation, and based on that, we can understand very well what the Gemara says, that even if the judgment, even if the decision is going to be exactly the same as what would have been decided in Beis Din, the mere fact that you're going to them, you're going to the secular courts for your resolution, for the adjudication of your dispute, is a disrespect, a profound disrespect for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so therefore it's a Chilul Hashem. This also would explain the halacha in Choshen Mishpat, Simen Samaches, that says that even if you're not going to have an adjudication based on their laws altogether, but you just would go in front of, let's say, the secular court, and you say to them, I want you to do an arbitration. I want you to do a pshara, that you're going to tell us, not based on the legal system or what it says in the statutes of laws and the legal books, but just based on the judges or the arbitrators' own sense of equity and fairness. Just give us a direction, tell us what to do. So if this arbitration takes place within the contours of their court system, so the Mechaber in Simen Samaches indicates that that would be prohibited as well. Rabbi Bleich writes about this in an article that he published regarding litigating in front of the Arkos, because if you go into their court system and their court structure, so then you're being machshiv, you're giving importance and significance to their legal system, even if they're not necessarily applying their separate legal rules, but they're just arbitrating. But, for example, if you go to a small claims court that's in their courthouse, and they give you a choice, you can either have a judge, you can have an arbitrator to decide a small claims case. You say, oh, I want an arbitrator, because I don't want them to impose their secular legal system upon me. So you might think that's okay. I just had somebody told me that they received a heter to do that sort of thing. I said, well, had you come to me, I wouldn't have given you such a heter, because the Shulchan Aruch indicates that would be a problem. Why is it a problem? It's a problem because you're being miyaker, you're being miyaker of a separate legal system by going into their courthouse for the resolution of your case. Now, there's a second reason that's given for the prohibition, and that is given, they're not mutually exclusive reasons. You can hold, and we generally do hold by both of these reasons. The second reason is given by the Rambam, Hilchos Sanhedrin, Perek Chobov, Halacha Zayin. It says the Rambam that Kol Adon Midayoni Akum Uvarko Shalehen, you go in front of the non-Jewish judges in their courts, Hareis HaRosha, very strong language, the person's a Rosha, Kidochire Begide, person's considered to be a blasphemer, Behavim Yabitoris Moshe Rabbeinu. Says the Rambam, the person has raised up his arm against the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu. This would apply to simply even if you would go in front of Jewish judges, presumably, and you would say in front of the Jewish judges that every single case that you ever decide shall not be in accordance with Torah Moshe Rabbeinu, but you're going to decide according to Turkish law, you're going to decide according to British law, you're going to decide according to ancient Roman law, you're going to decide according to principles of American law, and you have a whole just justice system that you create, not made up of the idolaters, not made up of a different nation, it's made up within the Jewish nation, but you tell the courts that I want to tell the judges, I want you to run these courts, not in accordance with Torah Moshe Rabbeinu, but a different system. So that is the complaint that was registered by the Chazon Ish and Rav Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog and many other Dayanim of Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank at the time of the creation of the modern day Medina Israel, when they established the Bagatz, they established a legal system that was premised upon Ottoman law, British law, etc., etc. So they said that you can't do such a thing, because even if you are not going to a different government and have a different government impose its laws upon you, you're not going to the idolaters, you're going to pick your Jewish judges from amongst your own midst, Nonetheless, if what they're going to be applying is a legal system that is other than Torah's Moshe Rabbeinu, so that is going to be a problem, because that would be Meirim Yad B'Torah's Moshe Rabbeinu. So each one of these reasons of why we have the prohibition contributes different ramifications of different things that we would not allow. There is also a separate question as to whether this is waivable. What if I had two Jewish parties and they say to each other, listen, we know that we're supposed to go in front of the Beis Din and not go in front of the secular courts, but we waive it. The plaintiff says to the defendant, I'm okay going to the secular court. The defendant says to the plaintiff, I'm okay going to the secular court, so can you make a tanai? Normally speaking, we have a principle in the Gemara based on the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, the Kol Tanai Shema Mamon Kayim. Whenever you have monetary transactions, you can make a tanai. You can make a condition that may not be exactly what the Torah otherwise prescribes. A shoel is normally liable for onsin, for accidents, but the shoel, somebody wants to, is going to be a shoel to borrow an item, and he says, let me borrow the item on condition that I'm not going to be responsible for onsin. So they can make such a tanai. You have a shomer, a chinam, who normally is going to be off the hook. If there's a gneva v'aveda, and somebody gives the shomer chinam an object and says, in this particular case, I want you to assume liability. If something should happen to my object, even though you're not getting paid for it, that you're going to accept liability for gneva v'aveda. It's okay. Shomer chinam can make that assumption of liability. This is the Mishnah in Baba Metzia. Says that all of this would be permitted because called Tanai Shiva Mamon Kayim. So is this a Tanai Shiva Mamon? Is this a case where we would allow this type of a condition? So comes along the Ramban. The Ramban at the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim says that there is a big distinction between the two different aspects of the prohibition of the Torah. He said, L'pneihem lo l'pnei ovdei kochavim is one aspect of the prohibition. And the other is, as I mentioned, L'pneihem lo l'pnei hadyotos. So you have to go in front of the Jewish law judges who are qualified dayanim, who have smicha to be dayanim, and not in front of the hadyotos, those who are unqualified dayanim. That would be a violation. So, says the Ramban, with respect to the aspect of the prohibition of L'pneihem lo l'pnei hadyotos, that's waivable. That's waivable. That's a davishib b'momon. That if both parties agree, they're going to go in front of three classmates who are not certified dayanim yet. Hopefully someday they will be. The yodin goal is just right down the hall, but they're not quite there yet. And both parties agree, that's perfectly fine. However, when it comes to the prohibition of going to the secular court, that's not waivable. Why is it not waivable? Well, very clearly, if it involves a chilul Hashem, involves being blasphemous, ki'ilu chirev v'gidev v'heirim yad b'toras Moshe Rabbeinu, as the Rambam says, so it's no longer simply a davar shebamamon. It's what we call a davar shebeisur. When we're dealing with a davar shebeisur, a ritual prohibition, just like two Jews are not allowed to stipulate in their transaction that they're going to violate the laws of ribbis, for example. They're not allowed to stipulate that they're going to violate the laws of Shabbos. They're not going to say, oh, between you and me, we're going to do business in Chazaflesh, and we're going to violate the Skor B'dvarim Asurim, whatever it is. You're not allowed to make a stipulation that you're going to violate a prohibition of the Torah. That's called Hamasna Mashikosa B'Torah B'Dovash B'Isser Tano Boto. If you make a tanai on something which the Torah prohibits, so then that tanai is batal. Says the Ramban, this would be in the same category that the tanai would be batal u mivutos. Comes along the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish says that in the context of the legal system that was set up in Eretz Yisrael, so really the violation there, technically speaking, is not lipneihem lo lipnei ovdei kochavim, no ovdei kochavim. You're going in front of the Jewish law judges. So really, it's a violation of Lifnehem Lifnei Hadyotos. You're going in front of judges who are not qualified to decide Jewish law. In fact, they're not going to be deciding Jewish law. They're going to be deciding some foreign legal system. But can't you make a tanai? Can't you make a tanai and just say if the both parties agree that they're going to go in front of these Jewish judges who are not qualified to decide the halacha per se, that this would simply be lifnei lo lifnei deltas, and you can make it tonight. So it says the Chazon Ish, no. In this case, even if everybody would agree to this, it would still be completely prohibited. Why is that? What about the Ramban? So he explains, because if you're adopting a foreign legal system rather than the Torah, so then that's not merely a Tanai Sheba Mamon, that's a Tanai Sheba Issa, because you're still being, as we mentioned, Meirim Yad B'Torah Moshe Rabbeinu. Because since you're forcibly rejecting the Torah tradition that was handed down from HaKadosh Baruch Hu by Moshe Rabbeinu, so therefore that becomes an act of giduf, that becomes an act of blasphemy, and it becomes a davar shebe iser. So in this case, it says the Chazon Ish, even lifneihem lo lifnei hadyoitos would enter into the realm of a davar shebe iser based on the circumstances. So the Rosh dealt with the question of, what if you have people who enter, two Jews, who enter into a contract, and the contract says that we're going to authorize for our disputes to be resolved, whether in the Jewish legal system, in the Beis Din, or in the secular courts. You say, Bei Medina Yisrael, Bei Medina Umos. So what does that mean? Obviously, that would be null and void. It's not going to be a valid clause. It says the Rosh, we do contract interpretation. There's such a principle in general law of other legal systems as well. People enter into a contractual clause that looks like it's in violation of the law. So if you have a way of construing the clause so that it doesn't violate the law, that's how you would interpret the clause. So says the Rosh, that's what we're going to do over here. We'll interpret the clause in such a way that it will be meant for a situation where it will be mutter for one party to take the other party to secular court. When would it be mutter? Says the Rosh, that if it turns out that, let's say, Reuven made a loan to Shimon and Shimon refuses to pay, Reuven summons Shimon to Beis Din, and Shimon refuses to come to Beis Din. So Shimon refuses to come to Beis Din. He's an olam, he's a strong-armed gangster, that personality. So the only way that Reuven will be able to recover his money from Shimon is by taking Shimon to a secular court, so then the Beis Din issues a heter or kos. The Beis Din issues a heter, they give dispensation that Reuven will be allowed to take Shimon to secular court. Since when does Beis Din authorize people to violate Yisurim? So the Ksam Sofer says, no, it's not that the Beis Din is authorizing the Reuven to violate an Isser. Reuven came to the Beis Din. He did the right thing by coming to Beis Din. But since Shimon refused to submit to the Beis Din, so therefore the Beis Din is now delegating the case to the secular court. By virtue of issuing a heter or kos, it's like the Beis Din is appointing the secular court to be its agent. As long as the primary jurisdiction is with the Beis Din, and the Beis Din is just then directing Reuven to collect what's owed to him by Shimon in secular court, so this would not be considered on its face to be an Isser or kos. That's the explanation of the Chasam Sofer. It's a different explanation that's given by the Kli Chemda at the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim, in which he says that normally you have to use the Beis Din if the Beis Din is going to work, if the other side is going to submit it to Beis Din. But otherwise, we simply say that this could be an application of Don Inish Dina, Avid Inish Dina Lenapshe, that a person can take the law into his own hands in order to enforce his rights against somebody else who has cheated him. It's just that it says, the Truma Sedeshin says, a Dabba Mechur, to enforce your rights by going to secular court, when that would be an act of defiance against the Torah system of law. So you have a Beis Din, so of course you should go to the Beis Din if you have to litigate the case altogether. But in the event that there is no Beis Din available to litigate the case, because the other party refuses to go to Beis Din, and Beis Din doesn't have the ability to compel the party to come because the person's in Olam, they're a strong-armed personality. So in such a case, then Reuven would be allowed to take Shimon to court. So says the Rosh, that's how we would construe such a contract. That it must be, that's what they meant. They meant that if one of the parties refuses to comply with their obligations under the contract, So then they refuse to submit to Mesdin. So then the party that would be the complying party, who would be the petitioning party, would be allowed to take the other party to a secular court. Says the Maharshal in the Yam Shel Shlomo, he says that there is one major result as by dint of the fact that you have this clause in the contract, and that is that under normal circumstances, if you didn't have this clause in the contract that specifically mentioned the possibility of going to the courts, so then if the other party refused to go to Beis Din, you'd have to get a special heter or kos in order for the Beis Din to authorize you to go after the other party. But if the other party essentially was a type of personality who indicated that he wasn't going to necessarily comply with Beis Din, and that's why you needed to put in the contract that you would have the right to enforce your rights against this person in secular court, so then, says the Maharshal, you have a built-in heter or kos. Obviously, when the time comes that there might be a dispute that breaks out between yourself and this other party, you should still, despite what the contract says, the contract also says, Bein Medinei Yisrael, Bein Medinei Osa Olam, you should still try to get the person to come to Beis Din, but if you see the person's not willing to come to Beis Din, in such a case as the Maharshal, you wouldn't even need a heter or a kol, so you would be able to go straight to a civil court because the person has already broadcast that this is something that you might need to do by virtue of the fact that this clause was already in the contract. This situation comes up nowadays from time to time because there's one question that you get in contemporary shilas. You have a Jew who's a firm yid, a firm fellow, or you have a firm organization that enters into a contract with another Jewish person, another Jewish organ, a Jewish-owned organization, and the other party is not necessarily so firm, or they're not careful about this particular mitzvah of going to the secular courts, and then they enter into a contract. It could be a sale and purchase contract, it could be a landlord-tenant contract, or whatever the contract happens to be, and the other party hands a contract and says that every single contract has a provision that's called the choice of forum provision. Choice of forum provision says in the event that there's a dispute, this is the forum, this is the place where we're going to go. We're going to adjudicate in court. So let's say the other party says, I want to put in the choice of forum provision that if there's a dispute between us, we're going to adjudicate the dispute in the state and federal courts of New York State. So the front party says, well, that's against what it says in the Torah. The Torah says, lifneihem, below lifnei akum, that we are not allowed to go to the secular courts. You have to change the clause. And the other party says, I'm not going to change the clause. You want to buy the house? You have to sign the clause. Otherwise, I'm not going to sell you the house. Or you want to rent the apartment? You have to sign the clause. Otherwise, I'm not going to rent the apartment to you. So what do? You have to walk away in such a case. So let's say this was a ribbis transaction. If it was a ribbis transaction, so we hold that even if I have a shuma, I have simply a signed contract where Reuven says I'm borrowing $100 from Shimon and I agree to pay ribbis, and Shimon says, don't worry, I'm never going to collect the ribbis. I just want you to sign this for legal purposes so they're not going to impute interest to me, but don't worry, it doesn't mean anything. So you're allowed to sign such a contract. Sabashis is not. Because that's already the level of shumas, what we call a violation of lo sesimun olam neshech, that if you just sign the contract, that you're going to pay somebody ribbis, even if you're not intending to, and they're not intending to collect. The mere signing of the contract is already a problem of ribbis. But what this discussion within the Rosh and the Maharshal indicates to us is if one is in such a bind, and they're entering into contract negotiations with another Jew who's insisting, and that other party is wielding the power. They're the ones who are selling the house you want to buy or renting the apartment that you want to rent. And they're insisting on this clause. So you negotiate as best as you can not to have such a clause. But if they insist on the clause, what they're really saying is that they can't be trusted when the time comes if there's a dispute that they'll go to Beis Din. And therefore, you have a built-in clause that says that if you don't secure their compliance, according to the Maharshal, you can just take them after that straight to secular court, even without a heter or kos from a Beis Din, although obviously in the first instance you should try to go to Beis Din. I had such a case in Chicago just a year or two ago, where there was a yeshiva that was buying a building from a congregation that had board members that maybe weren't sufficiently attuned to the importance of the Yisrael Kos, and they were insisting in the purchase contract where the congregation was selling the building to this yeshiva, they were insisting that the choice of forum clause would say that if there's a dispute, it'll be go to the courts of the state of Illinois. And the Shaila came to my desk exactly whether they had to break off the negotiation. So I tried to convince this person who was spearheading the contract negotiations for the congregation. I explained the Yisrael Kos and so forth. So he said, "No problem, Rabbi. We very much value the Beis Din. You're a wonderful institution in the community. And we're going to put in the contract that in the event there's a dispute, so we'll have the dispute mediated." Mediating means it's a non-binding resolution where you meet with the Beis Din. The Beis Din sits down with the parties and recommends a resolution, tries to get the two parties together on the same page. If the Beis Din is able to effectuate an agreement, wonderful, then there's an agreement, all is good. But if not, then they go back to square one and then they litigate. So normally when parties come to the Beis Din, we have this a lot in divorce cases. Card parties come, we're getting divorced, and they do a divorce mediation at the Beis Din. We must have at least 15 active cases right now of divorce mediation. So they sign an agreement, which is called the MEDARB agreement. What does MEDARB mean? It's shorthand, mediation arbitration agreement, that the Beis Din will appoint somebody, a divorce mediator, to sit down with the parties and try to reach a resolution on all of the different financial and parenting issues. But to the extent that a resolution can't be reached, so then whatever issues are still outstanding will be presented for arbitration. Arbitration means litigation. It means that litigation in front of a tribunal that's not an official governmental court, that's called arbitration. They come in front, whenever parties come in front of the Beis Din, that's called arbitration, because they're not going in front of a governmental court. They're going in front of the court that they've accepted upon themselves. That's called arbitration. And then whatever we decide, that's going to be binding upon them. So in this case, basically what this fellow who is representing the congregation was saying to me is, we're prepared to accept mediation, that you can try to work out a resolution with us, but we're not prepared to accept arbitration. He says that if you can't work out a mediation, so then we want the right to go to courts. I said it's not really good enough, halakhically, but at least it's closer to the Rosh's model of Bei Medina Yisrael, Bei Me'umos Ha'olam. And we had a little bit of a discussion with the yeshiva about whether they can enter into such a contract. So I pointed out, according to the Yavshel Shlomo, it seems like this would probably be okay because you're still committed to going to Beis Din, just the other party wants to insert this clause. And this way, you know that if the time comes and there is a dispute, hopefully there will never be a dispute, but if there would be a dispute, so you'll try to recommend that it be not only settled through mediation in Beis Din, but if it can't be settled through mediation, that an arbitration would happen afterwards. But if they refuse at that point in time, so then the contract would give you this right, not based on the Torah saying that there's no Yisrael Kos, but because the other party would be presumed to be recalcitrant. And then they consulted with one of the big Rosh Yeshiva in America, who was sort of their guiding force, and he was maskim with this hadracha, and so the contract went through, and Baruch Hashem, the yeshiva is thriving, everything should be good, and b'li ayin hara, there hasn't been any dispute. I malam ischus on the congregation, if there ever would be a dispute, that I think that they're heading in the right direction. In general, they would understand the importance of settling it in Beis Din. At the end of the day, it wouldn't be necessary to trigger the Arkos clause. But that's an example of this type of a negotiation and how this plays out. Now, one important thing that the post can talk about is that what it says in the Torah is Ve'ela Mishpatim. These are mishpatim. Mishpatim means ordinances. It means cases, basically monetary cases, where I have different disputes between Reuven and Shimon. It could be that if you're going to the secular court, not because there's some dispute between Reuven and Shimon, but there's something that you need to register. in the civil court that you wouldn't be able to register in a way that it would have any impact or value to you if you didn't register it in civil court, that if it's not an actual case in controversy between two Jews, that you would be allowed under those circumstances to utilize the civil court system. So, for example, Moshe talks about an uncontested will. If an uncontested will, so it has to be probated in order for all the assets to be distributed. So there's no fight here. There's no contest. There's no dispute between members of the family. Everybody's perfectly fine with the will being properly administered and all the assets being distributed according to the terms of the will. But it's not going to happen unless somebody goes to civil court, registers the will, and has the will probated through the authorization of the civil court. So that would be perfectly permissible, says Rav Moshe. Or, for example, we mentioned the divorce case. So parties, if they have any disputes when it comes to their divorce, they're supposed to go to Beis Din as opposed to going to civil court. But in order to obtain a civil divorce judgment, let's say that they've settled all of their disputes, but in order to obtain the civil divorce judgment, they have to memorialize their agreement. Maybe they came to an agreement in front of the Beis Din. This happens all the time. But then they have to, in Chicago, it's called a marital settlement agreement. They have to sign the marital settlement agreement, and they have to file it in court in order to obtain their civil judgment of divorce. So they'll be considered divorced according to the law. So entering the divorce agreement into court so that the parties can receive their uncontested civil divorce judgment, that would also be permissible according to halacha. A more dicey area, which really presents its own set of shilos, is if it is a criminal case. Now, the difference between a civil case and a criminal case is that criminal cases are not cases that are brought by Reuven against Shimon. Criminal cases are cases that are brought by the state. They're brought by the government against the person who is accused of the crime. So if you have, Rachmana Litzlan, a child molestation case, where somebody is accused of molesting a child, so there was some discussion, should that be something that would go to the Beis Din? So my response, when I was presented with that question, was that we can't handle the criminal aspects of the case because the criminal aspects of the case are not within Beis Din jurisdiction, that's within governmental jurisdiction. That's the government going against the child molester. We also don't have authority to put people in jail or to enforce any kind of criminal punishment against individuals that only the governmental authorities have the ability to do. There were communities in Europe. This is something that the Rush was very surprised to discover when he moved from France to Spain, and he discovered that in Spain, in Toledo, there was much more discretion and authority that was given to the Bat Din. You could whip people, you could cut off their limbs, you could put people to death, and do all kinds of different things. So they had that type of authority, but that was essentially a delegation by the government of their Dina de Mahusa authority to handle criminal matters, and the Jewish communities and Jewish Bat Din were given that authority by the government. But here in America, even though sometimes we wish we had that authority, we don't actually have the authority to whip people or put them in jail or do other things of that sort. So therefore, if you had a criminal case, so the criminal case would have to go to the criminal authorities. Now, of course, there's a whole separate question of Mesira. That's a different discussion in Shulchan Aruch. It's in Simen Shin Pei Ches, the prohibition of our coast. It's in Simen Chav Vav in Choshen Mishpat. And that there are rules and regulations about when you're allowed to hand somebody over to the criminal authorities. According to some opinions, like the Aruch HaShulchan seems to say this, the Tzitz Eliezer accepts that this is the correct reading of the Aruch HaShulchan, and that he wasn't only writing it for censors. But the Aruch HaShulchan says that nowadays, when you do have just governments that have fair laws and fair criminal systems that don't discriminate between the different nations, different ethnicities, etc., etc., and where the laws and the punishments are carried out with due process. So he holds there may not be a prohibition of Mesira handing over criminals to the legal authorities altogether. Other poskim, including Rav Moshe Feinstein, don't seem to necessarily agree. They say that sometimes, even nowadays, you might have a just country, but things are not quite as just. Once you get inside of the jail, there's a lot of unfairness and injustice and abuse that takes place in those settings. So the laws are still applicable. But even if you assume that the laws of Mesira are still applicable, there are cases where it's perfectly permissible and appropriate to hand over certain cases to the criminal authorities. And Rabbi Yashiv wrote, this is published in his Kovetz HaTshuvos, he said, certainly in the case of child molestation, that's what we call some of these mitzaris harabim, that the Shulchan Aruch and Kol Shemishpat, Simen Shin Pei Ches Siv Yud Beis, says that if somebody is a public nuisance to the Jewish community, they're committing acts, they could even be financial acts of criminality, and certainly if the person is endangering the physical welfare of those in the community by being a child molester, so then of course he says it's a mitzvah, it is an appropriate action, and it's the right proper thing to do to hand over those cases, those individuals, to the criminal authorities. So what I said when we were sort of confronted with this issue, when the Jewish community in general was dealing with the problem of child molestation, abuse, pedophiles, all of those things, I said what we could do is bifurcate the cases if it's possible, but you have to see whether they're subject to bifurcation. Bifurcation means splitting up. Is it possible that the criminal case can be brought in the criminal court, and then if it turns out that the person's found to be a child molester, is put in jail, whatever else, so there might be monetary claims that the victims will have against the offender, that they have to go to therapists for the rest of their lives, or whatever else there may be. There may be other monetary claims that are made for the damage and the suffering that was endured, and those monetary claims can be brought in Beis Din. But if the way in which the criminal system works is that you can't bifurcate, you can't separate the monetary claims from the criminal claim, so then we wouldn't be able to handle it under those circumstances. It would have to be a type of situation where the monetary claims were adjudicated separately, and then yes, it would be appropriate for those cases to be brought in front of the Beis Din when you're dealing with the monetary aspects of the claim. In a criminal case, there really is not a need, per se, for heter or kos when you have a clear danger based on unquestionable evidence that a person is guilty of criminality. The difficult cases are those where you don't have a clear-cut raglayim ledavar. So Rabbi Yashiv spoke about that. But you don't have a clear-cut raglayim ledavar where there isn't a very clear and compelling circumstantial evidence that demonstrates that the person definitely has committed some sort of a criminal offense. So then it's appropriate to have the right mechanisms for the right shiloh to be asked. Before there is a further action that is taken, so that you can ensure that you're not going too far when the halacha doesn't authorize it, but at the same time that you're not abandoning your responsibility towards the community. So in Chicago, we have something which I think is not paralleled in the rest of the country. At one point in time, there were a few types of mechanisms like what we have in Chicago, or there were a few types of batei din that were created. Now we have the only one, and that is a special Beis Din. We have a special Beis Din in Chicago for cases that are brought regarding allegations of inappropriate behavior. So we always say that if there is no question of a molestation, you go straight to the criminal authorities. But sometimes the parties aren't 100% sure what to do. It may not rise to the level where it's a criminal action, but it could be that there was a lot of inappropriateness from a halakhic perspective. in terms of interactions of somebody who is in a trusted position, whether that's in a camp setting, a school setting, yeshiva setting, a shul setting, whatever the case may be. And they need direction from the Besdin in terms of what to do, what steps should be taken within the community for people to be relieved of their position, for people to be informed of certain things that may have taken place so that they can make sure that they keep themselves and their families, their children safe and things of that variety. So we do have a special Besdin framework mechanism set up within the Chicago community. I can tell you that these things are not easy, and they can sometimes be rife with a controversy because you're dealing with very sensitive issues. But one thing that we're very clear about is exactly what Rav Yoshev said, which is that once there is clear grounds to conclude that there has been criminally actionable abuse, so that's something that we refer immediately and say needs to be referred to the criminal authorities. Yes.
When we say absolute evidence, we're talking from a legal perspective or from a law perspective?
It's a very good question. I think that in this particular context, and maybe this is a dangerous thing for me to say, but in this particular context, I think it's Hainuach. I think it's Hainuach. In this particular context, I think it's the same thing. I think it would end up being the same standard. Okay. Now, and there are other questions about what if the parties have stipulated appropriately that they're going to go to Besdin, but they stipulate that the Besdin is authorized to decide the case according to secular law. This is kind of an interesting question, because we said that if you have the Israeli legal system, which is completely premised upon principles of secular law, of other legal systems, so then the Chazon Ish and of Isaac Alevi Herzog and others railed against that idea, because they said this Meir Miad v'Toras Moshe Rabbeinu. But what if you have a Besdin that does follow Jewish law? However, the parties say to the Besdin, we just want you, in our case, to follow secular law because that's the legal system that we are familiar with and that we want it to apply to our transaction. Is that something that would be permitted or is that something that would be prohibited? So there is a tshuva of the Rashba regarding what seems to be related to this question. It's in Chelek Vav Siman Reish Nun Daled, and the Rashba talks about a case where there was a man who got married to a woman, okay, husband and wife, and the father-in-law, the wife's father, provided a generous dowry to the couple. So that dowry became their possession. But what happened was they had a child, and a couple of things happened after that happy beginning to their marriage. First, the wife died, and then the child died. So after all of this happened, so the father-in-law came to his son-in-law, and he said to him, that dowry that I gave you, so I want that money to go back to myself. So said the father, what are you talking about? I inherit my wife. I inherit my child. So it doesn't make sense anymore the money would go back to you. The Torah doesn't give the money back to you. The Torah says that the money goes to me. So the father-in-law said, well, I believe that this case should follow what is the norm in the legal world of the country in which we live. And the country in which we live, so the law is that in this situation, the dowry, when the daughter has died and when any grandchildren have died within a short period of time, like within a year afterwards, so then the dowry goes back to the father-in-law. So the Rashba says kind of two opposite things, so it's difficult to figure out what the holding is of this Rashba, because a lot depends upon which part of the tshuva you focus upon. The Rashba starts off by saying, well, kol tanai shebe mamon kayim. that whenever you have a condition that's monetary, so that would be considered to be enforceable, it would be a valid condition. And therefore, if there had been a condition at the outset of the marriage, that in the event that the wife would die and there would be no children, that the dowry would go back to the father-in-law, so then that would have been valid. And in fact, he points to a Yerushalmi that indicates that there used to be a common condition made of that sort, even within the Jewish community. And he says that if that's the general condition that people follow, even if you didn't make the condition, it would be automatic. We would automatically follow that because it would be implicit. It would be implicit that we would follow it. So it sounds a little bit like maybe the father-in-law is going to win the case, but not so fast. Then the Rashba says, in very clear and unambiguous language, he says, however, but if you're going to follow this because you want to imitate what the non-Jewish courts and the non-Jewish legal system is doing, and not because this is the custom of the Jewish community, that they just happen to follow this norm themselves, but because they don't trust their own Torah legal system and they want to follow what the secular courts do, nearly sha'asr, the fisha mechakes a goyim, then he says that would be usher because you're imitating the non-Jewish courts with zehu shehisira Torah, and this would be an application of what the Torah adjures us not to do, lifneihem below lifnei goyim, that you have to go in front of the Jewish legal system and not in front of the non-Jews. So here the Rashba seems to be saying that even to adjudicate the case according to non-Jewish law would be prohibited because that would also be an application of lifneihem below lifnei goyim. And then he goes further and he says, and don't think that you should apply what the non-Jewish legal system says and incorporate it within the Torah based on the principle of Dina de Malchus Adina, because Dina de Malchus Adina has to do with the right of the government to charge taxes and to have sweeping regulations of economic import that would be important for everybody in the nation in order to have an economically viable nation. But to replace the Torah system of law, Shechivu Lanu, Rebbe, V'achara, Barbina, V'Ravashi, V'yashir Yilmadu as B'nayim Dinei Agoyim, and then we're just going to tell everybody, go to law school, and you'll figure out what you're supposed to do in life with respect to all monetary transactions based on what you teach us in law school. So then he said that we may as well just throw out all of our volumes that we have in our Bate Midrashos. V'yivnalem Bamos Tluos, V'vayi Breis Midrasei Agoyim, Chalila Lotia Kazos, Yisrael, the Torah itself will end up being wearing ashes and sackcloth because there would be no use to all of our holy books anymore. So we don't incorporate the legal system into our halacha, into our shulchanach. There might be certain types of laws, as I said, of sweeping economic import, like bankruptcy laws, where if we would follow one system and everybody else a different system, so the whole regulation would break down and they wouldn't be able to have an economically viable society. So the post can talk about things like that. But when it comes to your regular interactions, or Yerusha, how inheritance is handled within the Jewish community, how our loan transactions are handled within the Jewish community, how our partnerships with each other are handled within the Jewish community, neighborly relations, things like that. So that's all only regulated by Jewish law. That's only regulated by halacha. And that's not something that we adopt or we incorporate from the outside. And then after talking about how you really couldn't have this type of an arrangement based on imitating the nations of the world and their legal systems, and you can't justify it based on Dina de Mahusa, then at the very end he says, oh, but by the way, if it's not just a davar shemamon, if it's just a regular monetary transaction, so of course, yachol l'shabed atzmo litei mishalosh shelo min hadin. Then of course you have the right to obligate yourself to give more than what is strictly required according to halacha. That's no problem. So what exactly did the Rashba say? So because the most colorful part of the Rashba was the part in which he said that it's usher. So that's the part that many poskim honed in on. And they said, oh, you see from this Rashba that you can't have an agreement even when parties have a choice of a forum provision that says that if we have a dispute, we agree that we're going to go in front of a Beis Din and not a secular court. You can't then have a choice of law provision, which is also a standard provision in most contracts. You can't have a choice of law provision that says that the Beis Din is going to decide according to secular law, because that also would be in violation of this Rashba. But it's important to note that there are five qualifying features with respect to this Rashba. One is that according to the way the Mechaber brings this Rashba, the Mechaber quotes it not in the Shulchan Aruch, but in the Beis Yosef. And the Mechaber says, well, the Rashba was talking about a case where the father-in-law wanted the case to be adjudicated in civil court. It's not talking about a case where we go to Beis Din, and it was just a question of whether Beis Din is going to decide according to some sort of principle of secular court. That would be okay if the parties would make such a condition, pipashis. Number two, it could be that to whatever degree we paskin like the Rashba, if you look at the Ramah in Siman Shin Samach Tes in Choshe Mishpat, so the Ramah says that we only paskin like the Rashba with respect to at least the only aspect of the Rashba that the Ramah brings is with respect to how we don't say that the laws of Yerusha are governed and regulated by Dina D'Malchus Adina. Whatever our laws of Yerusha we keep intact, and even if the governmental laws of inheritance are different, we don't follow their laws, we follow our laws. He doesn't talk at all about the parties making a condition to follow secular law. And number three, if you look at what the Rashba actually said was usur, the Rashba said that what was usur was to be mechake es hagoya, to imitate, to copy what the non-Jews are doing, meaning where you basically say that you don't trust the Torah system of law, chas v'shalom, and therefore you want to imitate what the secular courts say and only follow what the secular courts say because you just have blind trust. Like, for example, if you enter into a contract, you say, I don't know what the secular law is, but whatever the secular law is, that's what I want to follow. So that's kind of like a blind trust, and then that might be problematic. But let's say that you wanted to follow the secular law because you just wanted to do what is customary and you know what is customary. And since the secular law is consistent with what is the custom of the marketplace, what we call the minag ha-socharim, so then that might be perfectly okay. In fact, there is a comment that is made by Rabbi Akiva Eger towards the beginning of Chol Shem Mishpat. Rabbi Akiva Eger was dealing with two tradespeople. And let's say they were architects. And one of them wanted to bring the other one, maybe it was an architect doing work on somebody's property, a homeowner. It was an architect situation. So it was a question of, did the person follow whatever were the proper standards of architecture that are supposed to be followed when you work on a property? And one person brought the architect to Beis Din. And the architect said, no, we don't resolve our disputes in Beis Din. We resolve our disputes where? Not in secular court either. Going to secular court would be a problem. That's what we've been talking about up until now. But there's a third option. We have the Arbitration Association of Architects. It's nothing to do with the secular courts. It's a bunch of arbitrators that get together who are members of the Architectural Association, and they know all of the customs and practices of architects. And they meet and they hear about the particulars of the case and they say, yeah, this is what you should do, this is what you shouldn't do, this is how much money should be paid, this is how much money shouldn't be paid, this is what was done according to industry standard, this is what wasn't done according to industry standard, having nothing to do with secular law, but just what are the normal customs and practices of the trade. So says Rabbi Akiva Eger, quoting a Marashach, he says that it's perfectly legitimate the architect to say, I want to go in front of our arbitrators because that's how our disputes are typically resolved. That's not an issur or kos because you're not going to the secular court. In fact, the Aruch HaShulchan says it wouldn't even matter if the arbitrators are non-Jews. Even if the arbitrators are non-Jews, as long as they are not bound to follow secular law and they're not living in the court system, they're not the small claims court that's in the basement of the courthouse, It's just that they're in their own separate universe. It could be your next door neighbor. It could be you go to the architect's union building, wherever that happens to be located, and they have their arbitrators deciding the case. That is perfectly legitimate. This was relied upon by the Tzitz Eliezer in a tshuva. The Tzitz Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer Yehuda Waldenberg Zatzal, in Eretz Yisrael. So he dealt with a chok. They had, this was a little bit more of a chiddush because it was an actual law on the books. But they had a law in the books that said that if you live in certain housing complexes and there's a homeowners association, so then if you have any disputes between neighbors within that housing complex, the dispute, rather than being decided anywhere else, gets decided by the arbitrators of the housing association. And whatever they decide should be the resolution of the dispute, that's what will be binding upon the parties. And the Tzitz Eliezer was asked, is this a violation of our codes? And the Tzitz Eliezer said, no, because we see from Rabbi Akiva Eger that even if their parties are not going to Beis Din, but the custom of the industry, or wherever they happen to be, is to go in front of some arbitrators, they don't even have to be Jewish arbitrators, so then that's not a violation of our codes. They're just deciding not according to Jewish law, and they're not deciding according to secular law. They're just deciding according to whatever are the customs and practices, the menagim of the marketplace, and that would be perfectly legitimate. And therefore, he said that that would be okay. So by the same token, the way in which the Piskei Tshuva and Chol Shem Mishpat incorporates this idea of Rabbi Akiva Eger with a slight twist, not to contradict what Rabbi Akiva Eger said or how the Tzitz Eliezer applied it to the housing association case in Eretz Yisrael, but the way in which the Piskei Tshuva applies it is he says that even in the context of how Beis Din decides the case, let's say the case does come to Beis Din. So he says if the case does come to Beis Din, then the way that Beis Din should adjudicate that case should be in accordance with the Minhag HaSochrim. The Beis Din has to ask the architects, so what is the industry standard? Not looking in Shulchan Aruch about exactly how to paskin the case. They're looking at the industry experts. What are the customs and practices within this industry? Like, for example, when it comes to the diamond dealers in New York City. So we have our laws on the books of how kinyanim get effectuated, and there are different kinyanim that work and different kinyanim that don't work. But the way in which diamond dealers basically seal a deal is that they shake hands and they say mazal u'bracha. They say mazal u'bracha, so that's considered to be 100% binding, even if they may not have made something that would otherwise be a valid kinyan. That's called the concept of situmta, that the customs of the marketplace of Gemara Baba Metzia says are considered to be binding upon the merchants, and therefore that is something that the Beis Din would take into account as well. So if you would have, let's say, a custom of the marketplace, so Moshe Feinstein writes about this in the context of rent control. He says that, let's say that I would have a landlord and a tenant that enter into a lease where there is a rent control building. And in a rent control building, basically, the landlord doesn't get to say at the expiration of the lease term, okay, tenant, you have to leave, or doesn't get to say, I'm going to double the rent. The landlord is obligated to keep on the tenant as long as the tenant is prepared to pay the rent-controlled amount, and that's a controlled amount. That's why it's called rent control. So that they can't raise the rents more than a certain amount every single year, and the landlord isn't allowed to go to the tenants, according to secular law, and say, between you and me, it's okay, we're not going to follow this, and you're going to pay me double, and we just won't tell anybody, because if the government found out about it, they would be really upset. That's the general application of when the principle of Dina de Malchus Adin applies. The government's going to be mockery, they're going to be really upset. So we say, so then you got to follow Dina de Malchus. So Rav Moshe was asked, does Dina de Malchus apply to rent control? So Rav Henkin has a tshuva, which Rav Henkin says, yes, Dina de Malchus applies to rent control. So Moshe says, I don't want to deal with that question. I don't have to deal with that question. Why do I sometimes have that with the Supreme Court? They ask a very heavy loaded question. They say, the time may come we have to deal with that, but we can decide this case without having to deal with that question. So that's the same thing. Moshe said, I can decide this case without having to deal with that question. That question might be applicable if at the time they entered into their lease agreement originally, you didn't have to, it wasn't a rent-controlled building. But in this case, if it was already a rent-controlled building at the time they entered into the lease, so they entered into it based on the expectations of whatever were the rules that would bind everybody else in this market. And part of that is that if it's a rent-controlled building, that means the landlord is taking upon himself that he's not going to charge more than a certain amount, and that he's going to renew the lease if the tenant is prepared to pay whatever the rental amount is and so forth. And therefore, he says that it is binding upon the parties as a condition. It's considered to be a tenai shebimamon. It's as if they have made this condition because that's the minhag of the marketplace. And then Rav Moshe goes even further, and he says, and by the way, even if in the minhag of the marketplace is based upon what all the non-Jews do, what the non-Jews do may be because of what's written in the statutes or may be consistent with what's written in the rent control statutes, that doesn't make it any less legitimate. So you could say that, yeah, the Rashba is saying that if you don't have to take a certain law upon yourself, and there wouldn't necessarily be a desire to take it upon yourself, and it's not the custom of the Jewish community where he lived to necessarily take it upon yourself, but you're only doing it because you want to imitate or because you trust the non-Jewish courts and the non-Jewish law more than your own, and therefore you want even Besdin to apply the non-Jewish law, so that's a problem. But if you're doing it based upon following the customs and the practices of what people do in the marketplace, so then that would be perfectly fine. There's also a couple of other ways of qualifying the Rashba. The fourth way of qualifying the Rashba is saying that the Rashba, this is what Rav Zalman Nechemiah Goldberg suggested. We'll get to why Rav Zalman Nechemiah Goldberg was involved in this analysis of the Rashba in just a moment. But Rav Zalman Nechemiah Goldberg, Zetzal, suggested that maybe it's only when it comes to Yerusha, because Yerusha is like Chukas Mishpat, that's maybe more in the realm of Davar Shebe Isser, even though that's a question when it comes to a husband inheriting his wife. The Gemara says then, it's the Gemara is explicit. He can make a condition that he's not going to inherit his wife, but it's more the whole domain of Yerusha in general is outside of the realm of regular momentous, the regular monetary matters, and maybe the tshuva was only written with respect to not supplanting the entire framework of Yerusha from the standpoint of Jewish law. And then finally, Rav Ezra Basri makes the suggestion that maybe there's a distinction between what you have the courts in Israel doing, which is to say that there's no such thing as deciding cases based on Jewish law. The whole enterprise of Mishpat Tivri was a very nice idea. That was something that was promoted by Justice Menachem Elon, who was a great jurist, Zichrono Livracha. But Menachem Elon said that in every single case that the judges in Israel would sit down and decide cases, so there would be a value from a Jewish tradition perspective if they would give sort of the Jewish law reasoning background behind whatever the case would be. But at the end of the day, it wasn't decided based on Jewish law. It was decided based on the statutes of the state of Israel that weren't premised upon Jewish law, but he would incorporate Jewish law discussions into his decisions when he sat on the Supreme Court in Israel. And that's an interesting question, whether that really accomplished anything or whether it's kind of like painting lipstick on a pig, that, you know, the type of a mushel that it just kind of made it look more kosher, but it didn't really actually accomplish anything. And he also made creative use of how maybe the result would be the same by incorporating all of these ideas of minhag asokrim and tnai shebimamon and dina demachusa, but it can't be that it's always going to lead to the same result as a secular law, because then you have the problem of the Rashba. You may as well throw everything out the window. So it didn't work 100%. But Rav Zalman Nechemiah Goldberg said that when it came to specific transactions, people could make monetary conditions. We know that from the Gemara. And that basically was what Rav Ezra Basri was saying as well. He said, if you have an entire system of law which is premised upon that you always have to follow secular legal principles. So, of course, that's a problem. And if you're going to impose that upon the Beis Din, whether in the realm of Yerusha or anything else, so the Beis Din has its hands tied, so, of course, yes, that's a problem. But if I have individual parties who come to the Beis Din and they say that the way in which we structured our transaction was based on the minhag of the marketplace, the custom of the marketplace, and that happens to be consistent with the civil law, so then he says that certainly should not be a problem. And that basically was part of the conversation that was taking place at the time that the Beis Din of America here in New York was framing its prenuptial agreement, because Uzama Nechemia was advising the Beis Din that in order to encourage parties to utilize the Beis Din system more, so one of the reasons that it was happening, that in divorce cases that they were being litigated in secular court, he felt, was that the women in particular didn't trust the Beis Din system. They felt that they would have a better deal, so to speak, if they would go to secular court, which decided the distribution of the marital assets in accordance with equitable distribution, would give the woman more of the assets and so forth. So they felt more comfortable utilizing that system. So Senator Zalman and Femia Goldberg, if in fact this idea of equitable distribution, whatever it means, however it plays out, is the expectation of the parties when they get married, so there's nothing wrong with the parties when they get married writing into the prenuptial agreement contract that we authorize the Beis Din to decide the case in accordance with principles of equitable distribution, because that's consistent with their usual course of conduct. Rabbi Mordechai Willich Shlita has this rule of thumb to test and see what's considered to be a party's usual course of conduct when it comes to their monetary dealings in marriage. So there's a very easy litmus test. Whenever there is some sort of a monetary issue that they have, a question that arises, so when they pick up the phone to ask a question, who do they call? Do they call their local attorney, or do they call their local rabbi? So if they call their local attorney, that shows that their course of conduct, their regular course of dealing, is in accordance with whatever are the customary practices of general society and secular law. If they call up their rabbi, that means that their usual course of conduct is in accordance to with whatever the halacha says. So parties can make that determination when they sign the prenuptial agreement. So the way that it used to work was that the prenuptial agreement gave the parties sort of an option that they could say that they wanted the Beis Din to decide the case according to the normal principles that the Beis Din always employs of a Jewish law and pshara, krova l'din, and compromise equity based on principles of Jewish law, or they can click off the box saying we want the Beis Din to decide the case according to the general rules of equitable distribution that are customarily employed in the United States. So people would choose what option or the second option and so forth. And what the version used to say is the parties agree that the Beis Din of America is authorized to decide all monetary disputes, including division of property and maintenance, that may arise between them based on principles of equitable distribution law customarily employed in the United States. So Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg said he thought there's absolutely nothing wrong with using that type of language. And he was even okay with referencing, I think in the most original version, this was like a second version, in the original version, it even may have referenced the statute in question, and he was even okay with that. Rav Zvi Spitz, author of the Minchas Tzvi, said, no, if you are comfortable with a certain provision, and the provision is 200 pages, so have a 200-page writer to your contract saying, these are the provisions that we're comfortable with, but if you explicitly reference the statute, so then you're incorporating secular law, and that already runs afoul of the Rashba, and that Zalman Nechemia was not convinced by the correctness of that argument. If it's okay to incorporate the provision, you could reference the statute. But we took out the statute in the second version. And then finally, there's a third version. And the most current version of the clause in the Beis Din of America prenuptial agreement took out all these complicated options of either choose the first option of Jewish law and pshara, customarily employed by the Beis Din, or choose and say that you're comfortable with principles of equitable distribution. Why take it out? Because if you think about it, even the first clause that says the Beis Din should follow regular rules of Jewish law and equity and pshara, so what does equity take into account? Equity takes into account, for sure, these, as does Jewish law in general, these principles of what are considered to be the tanaim, the conditions, the monetary conditions made by the parties, whether they're explicit or whether they're implicit. So, of course, the Beis Din will look at the customary manner of dealing of the parties and see that if it's consistent with what's generally done in the secular world, so then the Beis Din will use that as its halakhic standard anyway. So therefore, I think that the newest, the most recent version, is probably 5 years old, something like that, in the prenuptial agreement, is more reflective of this reality and this harmonizing between the idea of following the minhag ha'sofrim, the customs in the marketplace, without in any way jettisoning or diminishing the Jewish law, jurisdiction, and mandate of the Beis Din. It says as follows. The parties agree that the Beis Din of America is authorized to decide all monetary disputes, including division of property and maintenance that may arise between them, and to utilize principles of equitable distribution in accordance with customary practice as the Beis Din deems appropriate according to principles of Jewish law, equity, and local custom. So everything is all included in one clause. To whatever degree the customary practice of the parties dictates that equitable distribution law should be taken into account by the Beis Din, then the Beis Din will do so. So therefore, the approach that the Beis Din of America follows, and this approach is also endorsed by such luminaries as the Minchas Yitzchak, who writes this Beferish and his Chubas as well, you have it all in the materials here, is that when there is an explicit condition that the parties make based on their customary dealing, that they want the Beis Din to decide a particular issue in accordance with whatever is done in secular society or in accordance with secular law, so Beis Din will respect that to the fullest degree permitted under Jewish law. Sometimes, and this is one of the reasons you need a Beis Din, sometimes the Beis Din won't be able to respect the provision entirely. If, for example, the statute that they want to follow or the secular law practice that they want to follow would violate an actual iser, it would violate a ritual prohibition of Jewish law, so then obviously we won't be able to respect it. If, for example, it says that we're going to be collecting prohibited interest or things of that variety or schar shabbos or things of that variety, so then obviously we won't be able to respect it. So you know, everything has to be done in a fashion in which we carefully analyze the agreement in question to determine that it's being done for legitimate reasons and that it incorporates a law which can legitimately be applied according to Jewish law. Now, another case that comes up where there is a question of can I go to secular court is where somebody gets sued by the other party in secular court. So here, Rav Avadya Yosef makes it very clear. He's talking about being a lawyer to represent a party in secular court. He says that if you are the party, you're representing somebody, you're representing Reuven, and Reuven wants to sue Shimon in secular court, so you can't do that as a lawyer, because that's lifnei iver, or misayei yedei ovrei avera. At the very least, you can't do that. That would be a prohibition. But if you're representing Shimon, and Shimon is the one who gets sued in secular court by Reuven, so then Shimon has the right to save himself in secular court when it's quite clear that Reuven isn't going to Beis Din because Reuven sued him in secular court. So then Shimon has the right to defend himself in secular court, and Shimon's attorney, who is Jewish, has the right to represent him in secular court as well. I sometimes get queries from attorneys asking me, they work for a particular firm, and they're in the litigation department, and the firm and wants them to represent the Jewish plaintiff who's taking a Jewish defendant to secular court. Are they allowed to do that? And I tell them they should really avoid it. There are heterim that some poskim have suggested that you can perhaps get out of the Lifnei Iber problem if it's Chad Iber Denaro, that if they didn't choose you, they could have chosen a different attorney, according to the Mishnah Lamelech, would have to be a non-Jewish attorney, that they would be able to find that would represent the Jewish party to take the other party to a secular court. Even then, there's still a problem of Misayeya de Obrei Avera, and the Shach says the problem of Misayeya, which is an issue of the Rabbanan, that you're helping somebody commit a sin, it may not be the Doraisa of Neiber, if the person can easily violate it anyway through somebody else's assistance who's not Jewish, but nonetheless, there's still an issue of the Rabbanan. So the Shach says if the person's a mumer, the person is a complete non-observant Jew who violates all the commandments of the Torah, so that Issa D'Rabbanan does not apply. So some say that if you're dealing with somebody who's not from, so maybe then you can, or if you to follow what the No Debiuda says, the Dagami Ravava, maybe they're from in other ways, but they're not from in this way. They're a Mumal Ledavar Echad when it comes to going to secular court. So maybe you can get out of the Issa D'Rabbanan. But I say, what I generally tell them is that you still shouldn't do it. Maybe you can rely, if necessary, on Heterim. You should ask, don't rely on the Shear. In any individual case, ask your local posek. But if you would otherwise lose your job, like you're working for a firm, and maybe if you don't do it, you'll get fired. And if so, maybe you're not really the one doing it anyway. It's really just the partner who's doing it, so it's more attenuated. But I tell people that if you do have control of your cases, even when I was an associate in a law firm, way back when, I had a certain amount of control in my cases. They gave me a case of which was a shareholder derivative suit, and I said, this is great, I love this case, and our party is so obviously in the right. And they said, oh, and I did a good job, and they said, oh, we're going to put you in litigation. They put me on another case, and I said, I don't really like the way in which the side that we're representing has to approach this case, so I don't really want this case. So they didn't throw me out of the law firm. They just didn't keep me in litigation. They put me in real estate instead. That's okay. But as a general rule, what I tell the lawyers is that we're talking here about an iser which is meir miyad b'toras Moshe Rabbeinu. We're talking about an iser which the person is ki'ilu chireif begideh. A person is a miyakesh shem alinim. A person is machalal es Hashem. Look at all these lashonos that are used by the Rambam, that are used by Rashi, that you don't want to participate in an endeavor that's going to involve chilul Hashem, that's going to involve blasphemy of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, chas v'shalom. So therefore, I tell them that even if you can fetch out a heter, this is something which is better to stay away from. Certainly, if you have the ability to call the shots, you should just encourage the people to come to Beis Din. Worst case scenario, they're not going to agree to go to Beis Din, so you can encourage them to instead bring the case in front of the American Arbitration Association, like Rabbi, consistent with the Psak of Rabbi Akiva Eger, because the American Arbitration Association, according to their rules and guidelines, they're not bound by secular law. The arbitrators can decide the case according to local equity and custom and what's considered to be just and fair under the circumstances. So therefore, that wouldn't count as our cause. That would be better than representing somebody in a fashion in which there'd be a clear-cut avera of bringing the matter in front of the secular court. Similarly, there's a discussion, Rav Asher Weiss speaks about this, Rav Ben Zion Rosenberg writes about this in the journal Divrei Mishpat. Can you threaten somebody? Can you threaten them, oh, I'm going to take you to secular court unless you pay me the money that you owe me? So you're not planning to actually take them to secular court. You would only litigate the case in Beis Din, but you're just using it as a threatening tactic. So here, too, this could run afoul of the idea of you being miyakir shem alilim. You're not going to be meirim yad b'toras Moshe Rabbeinu because you wouldn't adjudicate the case in a secular court, but you are giving them credence and giving them prestige by saying that, this is a case that I'm going to invoke the name of the secular courts in order to gain an advantage. So I tell people that that's something that you shouldn't do either. That's how Rav Asher Weiss paskins, that's how Rav Osna paskin, and they also are medayik from the Lashon of the Shulchan Aruch, because the Shulchan Aruch has kind of a double Lashon in terms of the prohibition of going in front of a secular courts. that it's sort of a combination, that you can't go in front of the secular court and you can't adjudicate in front of the secular court. There's sort of this double lashon in the Shulchan Aruch, and the double lashon is sort of indicative of the fact that it's not only a prohibition to go in front of the secular courts, but it's a prohibition even to utilize the secular courts for purposes of gaining an advantage. So therefore, I tell people that if you want to use some sort of a language, you can say that I will take, if you don't pay up your obligations, whatever it is that you feel that you're owed, you could say I may be forced to take appropriate legal action. I may have to take appropriate legal action. So appropriate legal action, been going in front of a bezdin, is also appropriate legal action. The actual lashon that I'm referring to in the Shulchan Aruch is also lodun mipnei dayan yakum. You can't have the case adjudicated there. And then the Shulchan Aruch goes on to say bechol haba lidon. And anybody comes to have a judgment bipneim, arayz a rosh u'kidachile v'kirei v'gidei. So the double lashon is also ladun, and then bechol habalidon. So it sounds like there are two things: there's ladun, and then there's balidon. So balidon could include making this type of a threat. There's a separate discussion in the poskim about what about enforcing a judgment in front of the secular court. There's a little bit of a suffix that's raised by the Tumim Simen Chabav regarding this question. Is that considered to be a violation if I'm not adjudicating the case in civil court? Just now I have a judgment from the Beis Din and I want to enforce that judgment of the Beis Din in a civil court. So the Tumim says, well, maybe that's also considered like you're giving credence to the civil court system. But here, most poskim, including the Marashat or Shlomo Kluger, most of the poskim say that it's not the case, because the reality is that here you're going to the civil court system not to give credence to their system, but to give credence to the Beis Din. You're asking them, "Ase mashi salom lecha." Like the Mishnah in Gittin says, you're asking them enforce basically what the Beis Din has paskin. But in order to erase any ambiguity, what many batei din do, including the Beis Din of America, the Beis Din of the Chicago Rabbinical Council, is that we include in our shtar beruin, in our arbitration agreement that's signed by the parties before they adjudicate the case in Beis Din, that we are authorizing them to enforce any judgment that we issue in the secular courts, so that there is no question about the fact that it's something which is being specifically authorized by the Beis Din, and therefore that would not be a violation of our code. Similarly, whenever you're dealing with a non-Jewish party, although there is a Tashbetz who seems to say, based on the pasuk of Mishpatim Bayidum, that we're supposed to Magid Rav Yaakov Chokum Mishpatim Yisrael V'Vlos Hachen Chokoy Mishpatim Bayidum, that we're supposed to have cases adjudicated even with non-Jews is supposed to be in the Beis Din system. So the Tashbetz says, with respect to that pasuk, it teaches us that even non-Jews should go to the Beis Din. So if a non-Jew says he wants to adjudicate the case in Beis Din, so you should have the case adjudicated in Beis Din. But if you can assume that unless the non-Jew says that he wants a case adjudicated against the Jew in Beis Din, you can assume that he would not go to Beis Din, and you'll be allowed to take him in the first place to civil court. So if you had a case that involved an insurance company, so where one Jew is suing another Jew, but it's like a medical malpractice claim, but the doctor is really not paying himself for any damages, but it would be the insurance company that would be on the line. So in such a case, since it's really, says Rabbi Bleich, the insurance company that is the real party in interest, you would be allowed to bring in that case, al pi pashtus, to the civil court. Similarly, if you need adjunctive relief, an emergency motion, that could also, says Rav Moshe, the injunctive motion to stop somebody from removing their assets could be brought in civil court as long as you make it clear that the underlying case you want to adjudicate only in Bezdin. We should be zocha, certainly, for the kiyum of what we dive in for every single day, that we should have the pristine, the full-fledged justice system of the Bat Din and the Sanhedrin restored to their full glory.